Before I introduce the next speaker, I want to just relay an experience from Chicago. Across the street from my office, there's a cosmetic shop that has opened up, kind of like a Malcolm X goods counter in the back. And so they display, you know, the t-shirts and the books and various Malcolm X paraphernalia in the window. And so one of my co-workers, who's white and, you know, very liberal in her political outlook, came back from lunch, and she was very upset because she had seen this t-shirt in the window that said, "By any means necessary." And she caught me in the hallway. She says, "You know, Michael, do you think Malcolm X was a militant?" And it dawned on me that, first of all, most of the time when that statement is used, freedom is left out of it, which puts it in perspective, you know, freedom by any means necessary. And also that her idea of what a militant is something that probably represents a large portion of our society, which is, you know, basically someone standing with a machete in their hand with blood dripping off of it. And these are the type of images, you know, that we are faced with as writers and overcoming. So I think that the next speaker, Howard Wright, from the Committee to Preserve the Image of Malcolm X, have quite a task before them, as we all do. Howard?
Wow, I didn't realize I was next. First of all, I'd like to, I'm not going to be very long. I'm just going to pretty much state the purpose of our particular organization is the Committee to Preserve the Image and Works of Malcolm X. I'm going to speak very briefly on a couple of things that concerns us very much. And I'm probably going to say a couple of very controversial things about the conference here, which I think that the organizers themselves, Abdul Kalima and Bill Sales, ought to be given a rounding hand of applause. And I think that the efforts that they put together today with regards to trying to at least let everybody debate the issues, the debate being raised on the various different things that are happening, where we are today, where young people view Malcolm, where we view Malcolm, where he, we believe he would have been today, all those type of issues need to be raised. The Committee to Preserve the Image and Works of Malcolm X is a fairly new organization. It's the new kid on the block, more to speak. We were formed actually as a result of the fact that we found out that there were very few people, if at all, dedicated for the single-minded purpose of putting together everything possible on Malcolm X and putting it in one spot for an entire world to come to see. That's important because, you see, someone raised an issue yesterday in one of the conferences in Ghana, and if you didn't, and let me just say one thing about the conference in Ghana, because we're very fascinated about Malcolm's trip on Africa, which I'm going to speak about very briefly in a second. But if anybody hasn't heard the tape on Ghana, I suggest you go get it, because the insights that Alice Windham and some of the other people, speakers that talked about the impact that that Africa had on Malcolm and Malcolm had on Africa is extraordinary. Let me tell you something. Malcolm, I guess I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I think it's necessary to do that. You see, for 25 years now, the African American image of Malcolm has been asleep. What I mean by that is just this. There's been an iconization of Malcolm all the way through, to the point that people have put him in little spots and have categorized them any old way they felt like it, and they put him everywhere that they want. We really feel that it's a violation on Malcolm's image as a whole, for us not to know every fact there is to need to know about Malcolm, so you can see for yourself exactly what Malcolm was about. Everybody says Malcolm was about this. Everybody says Malcolm was about that. Everybody says that he was a socialist. He was for gay rights. He was for this. He was that. He was this. He was all that. Someone raised an issue in one of the planetary sessions yesterday about that issue in itself. We don't take a political issue and all of any of that. We just say, let's get all the material together in one spot, let everybody in the world have access to it, and let you come to your decision yourself. We are attempting to put together every single manuscript, every single videotape, every single tape, every single piece of information on Malcolm that's necessary for the world to see. We are now cataloging the entire FBI, CIA, State Department files right now so that you could see it in progressive fashion of exactly what took place and what happened. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples of what we mean. And I hope I don't sound too passionate about my role in handling this. Because you see, the impact that Malcolm had on me was so profound at the age of 15 years old that when I heard him for the first time, I'll just go back for a second because this is important in terms of how we see, how we enthusiastically embrace this project. You know, I was a member of SNCC in 1966 in South Carolina. And we had a student pride educational club in our high schools and some other things. And what happened is just before joining that, I came, someone dragged me to one of the classrooms because they wanted to hear some part of the Battle of the Bullet by Malcolm X. And when we got there, my attitude was, man, because I was already told by my parents and everybody else that this dude was bad news. So I'd already been preconditioned and brainwashed to look at Malcolm in a certain perspective. So as I got into the classroom, I was prepared to listen to 2 or 3 minutes, and then I was prepared to leave because I knew that this guy wouldn't have anything of any value whatsoever to say. The record of everybody remembers Malcolm said, "Brothers and sisters, I see some enemies." Laughed in the audience and all of a sudden caught my attention. I never heard something like that said into an audience. And as I listened to Malcolm, from that point on, my entire life was transformed. The entire transformation that took place within my soul made me realize what people have done in terms of turning other people off and understanding the important impact of Malcolm X. Because Malcolm X, as a person, as a live person, to be looked at, not as as someone who should be venerated up there in the clouds, because Malcolm was a very mundane person. He understood politically and other things what was going on. And that was one of the criticisms that I wanted to make necessary of the conference, but I think that there are some things that need to be set straight in terms of the role with Malcolm X and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know, because you see, a lot of people are using that particular relationship, especially towards the end when it degenerated to the point where the unfortunate clash that took place between the two, or the organization, which was actually going on a little bit before that, but in terms of what actually made him leave the organization, needs to be examined a little bit more closely. There was an article in the Big Red yesterday. It's a local newspaper that that's in New York City. Did anybody read that? If you get a chance, read it. It was an article by a brother by the name of Joseph Muhammad. And one of the things that he wanted to examine was that, you know, the fact that Malcolm couldn't take a 90-day suspension. He couldn't take it. And why couldn't the brother just do it? And he quoted facts and other things that he had, and it ran in the paper. It was in response to another article that took place. we just take a position on that type of thing is just bring the information out, let it be examined, let it be examined across other facts and see what's happening, because the facts in itself doesn't verify that, even though I'm not going to make that debate right now. I just wanted to bring a point out in terms of information going out and how people can formulate images and just set it out in the atmosphere, and how you can just be formulated and formed by those opinions. And then I'm going to get into a couple other examples about things that probably most of us look at. And I'm hoping that we'll crush at least a couple of myths when I deal with that particular part. But the fact of the matter is that Malcolm, when he found out that he was going to be suspended indefinitely, is when he left. Not because he couldn't take it. He couldn't take a suspension. And I'd just like to quote something from Malcolm X, A Man of Time, another book. It's a new edition that just came out, John Henry Clark. I suggest if you haven't read from the old edition, reading the new one again will just keep you refreshed. It's a statement that Malcolm made on the FBI tape. And Malcolm taped himself when he found out that the FBI was going to actually visit him. And one of the things that the FBI agent suggested to him is they were trying to make him an agent for the FBI because of the split. They helped to cause the split, cause the problem, then leaned on him emotionally to try to see if they can make him go against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which he wouldn't do. And I want you to mind you, he was suspended in December. This was done in May, which is obviously more than 90 days, and he was still holding allegiance, not trying to reveal to anybody else what the feelings of he had personally with regards to it. The agent says, talking about suspension. Yes, about that. How is your suspension status? Trying to play on him, you know, trying to do the emotional thing on him. And Malcolm says, no one knows for Mr. Muhammad. You'll have to ask him. The agent says, you are still in suspension now. Are you working or teaching now? I'm still under suspension, Malcolm answers. That is a temporary thing as far as you know, the agent says. And Malcolm replies, he's the only one who can give out any information. I couldn't say nothing behind what he would say. And it goes on that I think that he said it was a temporary suspension. This is the agent. How soon would you resume your duties? We would be, as you are sure, interested in having you help us out. And Malcolm says just to him, help you do what? We are always helping the government. We've been cleaning up crime, and then he's about to go into this whole thing, and the agent said, fine, and then it went on. There's a couple other examples which I'm not going to take time to recite, but the information is there that will clearly show what the relationship of Malcolm was to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, what caused the break, and if Malcolm was just a crybaby that couldn't take suspension, those type of things. Some of these things are very dogmatic issues that go back and forth. But the point that I wanted to make in regards to it is that if we need to preserve information to the point of putting it together so that we can understand what the relationships were and other things. Now I'm going to make the controversial statement that I wanted to say in reference to the conference. One of the brothers stood up yesterday in a plenary session, and he basically wanted to know what was the positive role of the Nation of Islam and what did it do, and it was sort of put down a little bit in terms of, okay, as far as they were concerned, as far as, well, the speaker at least, I'm not saying the conference, I'm saying the speaker, was concerned was that, you know, they were nationalist organizations like Garvey and everybody else and all those types of things, and that's all the role that they played, but that's wrong. Malcolm said time and time again, and I got 100 different quotations here, which I won't go into in the Playboy interview and other places, I've said, that Elijah Muhammad was the one that taught him. Nobody would even disagree to the fact that if Malcolm had not met the teachings of the Nation of Islam while he was in prison, that even though he had that same nationalist background with his father being killed in the Marcus Garvey movement and the other nationalists. By the way, a lot of people don't know this. Malcolm's mother was the secretary of the UNIA. Very few things are said about his mother's role in the whole thing, but we've dug up some more material on that that we're going to be sharing with some people. But there are records in the Garvey movement that shows her involvement as the secretary. But that's another thing. What I'm saying is that for us to dismiss Malcolm's the impact in the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, on Malcolm X as a whole, is to say, like other white media and other people do to us, that our origins aren't important is what you're looking at right now. It's important to look at the whole evolutionary effect of each individual impact that had on Malcolm and Malcolm had on individuals. To try to hide that is if to say his revolutionary Pan-Africanist philosophy that developed even wider when he finally left the Nation of Islam was what Malcolm X was is a fallacy for all of us to try to stop right now. And my only sorrow is that some of the people who pointedly disagree with some of the positions that Malcolm took and some of the other things were not given a forum for debate. It doesn't mean that they have to be right, but if we're including papers to talk about the impact and everything else that happens about Malcolm, pro and con, we need to have every point of view necessary before us to examine. And I was told that I have about 5 more minutes, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to use one more example, and I'm sorry I couldn't get into the whole thing, but I'm just going to use one more example, and I'm going to use the example of Elhaj Malik El Sabas. Malcolm obtained the title of Elhaj when he went to the Middle East. Now, I want you to understand what that means. It means that when everybody goes to the Middle East as a Muslim, you obtain the title of Elhaj. And when you take the Hajj. Malcolm was fascinated even when he sent his letters back and everything else and he returned to America. What was the big fuss about this name, Elhaj? And it's important to understand that. Malcolm X, when he was in jail, was named Malachi Sabas when he was in jail. He changed it a little bit later on to Malik Sabas when he was in jail. His passport said he was Malik Sabas. The only point that went on Malcolm's, the only thing that changed with Malcolm is he took a hash. The reason why I'm pointing this out is just like Omawale when he went to Nigeria and was given the title, the Returning Son. These were titles that indicated certain things. And the reason why I said earlier we've been asleep for 25 years is because of this. We have allowed the white media to manipulate us into looking only at certain aspects of Malcolm's trips over in Africa and the Middle East to make it look a lot like that was the only thing. There was a greater impact on Malcolm and Malcolm on Africa than ever was when he went and took his Hajj in the Middle East. Malcolm was so, and I wish that I could go through some of these notes and some of the things that I had prepared to just read for you, but I won't. But I will say this. And our reading of the FBI reports, the CIA reports, the State Department reports, and all the other reports that they still have hidden from us that we're going to get. It's just a matter of time in identifying where they are. They were so preoccupied in what Malcolm was doing in Africa, they were terrified. You should read some of the notes. You should read some of the things, and hopefully when we make and when we give our reports and start to put them together for you so you can see in an annotated way what it looks like. What the United States government was so terrified. If you read some of the things Malcolm was saying in Africa and the impact that he had on Africa, how it affected them so much that when one professor in one of the schools, I think it was Seton Hall and Nigeria, said something about Malcolm that disagreed, the students wanted to rise up, have a riot, and kill him. They were so overwhelmed by Malcolm's oratory over there that Malcolm and they start changing. I when I was reading reports, I saw the same changes that took place in me, taking place in those brothers in Africa. But more than that, the impact of all that on Malcolm has not even been completely recorded yet, so that we can properly assess what the trip meant. And when I say, and I'm going to end it right now, and when I mean by we've been asleep, is that we have allowed other media to define for us what Malcolm's role has been all along, and we have to stop it. And just finally, in my departure, I just wanted to say that one other thing was brought up in the debate in the Ghana piece was that, you know, some people were awfully upset that Pathfinder's Press had so much control over so much of Malcolm's materials. Thank God for Pathfinder's Press. That doesn't mean that I agree with the interpretations that they had. That doesn't mean that we agree for those type of things, but we were negligent in our duty in preserving those records ourselves, and if Pathfinder Press had not come together and preserved those records, we may not be even looking at some of the stuff that we're talking. We may not even have the mass amount of material that this conference has done. I'm not a defender of Pathfinder Press, and I'm not a member of this staff, but what I am saying is this. Let's look at ourselves as well. It is time to start preserving our own archives, our own libraries, our own things, so we don't have to say in the future that somebody else has our records. We need to have them ourselves, and thank you. I'm sure some of that other